My name is Dr. Sarah Metcalf. I'm a GP Registrar and Publications Fellow at Australian Family Physician, and it's my pleasure today to be talking with Dr. Louise Stone. Louise is a practicing GP, the Senior Medical Advisor at GPET, and in her spare time, a PhD candidate for the Centre for Values, Ethics and the Law in Medicine at the University of Sydney. And it is with that hat on today that she'll be talking with us about her article published in this month's Australian Family Physician entitled On Botany and Gardening, Diagnosis and Uncertainty in the General Practice Consultation. Welcome, Louise. Many thanks for taking the time to talk with me today.
You're welcome, Sarah. Anytime.
Okay. Now, the title of your article is quite intriguing. Can you perhaps start by just explaining the background and this plant analogy that you use in terms of an approach to diagnosis in patients, particularly with complex and chronic illness?
Well, I'd love to say that the analogy is mine, but it's not actually. It's by a guy called Sadler, who's a psychiatrist who spent 10 years writing this fabulous book about values and psychiatric diagnosis. And he lived in Texas, and his analogy was that botany is one point of view, but gardening is another. So using that allegory, he was describing that botany is like categorical diagnosis, knowing what a plant is and how to describe it and how it relates to other plants, that sort of thing. But to actually grow a garden, you actually needed different forms of diagnosis, which included things like context and aesthetics and all those sorts of things. So he was describing how when you look at a psychiatric diagnosis, you can actually look at things from different points of view, and the category is not the only way to see things.
Right, okay. So, I mean, as GPs, we certainly know the effect that psychosocial issues have on our patients, and we like to think we take that into account. You break down diagnosis into three different areas, ways of looking at it: the medical diagnosis, the psychosocial formulation, and then the psychiatric diagnosis. Could you talk us through a bit about that?
Sure. Well, one of the things I've noticed, I guess, through the years of teaching registrars is that often what happens when you're learning in general practice is you try to do several things at once in your own head, and that can be quite tricky. So I guess one of the things I try to do is look at patients from different perspectives quite deliberately, one at a time. So obviously in the back of our mind, we're always worried with patients with medically unexplained symptoms that we've missed something. And given that 6 to 10%, they think, of our patients have rare diseases, I guess that's quite understandable, really. So yes, there is a time when you consciously put your biomedical doctor hat on and try and make sure that you make a medical diagnosis and you don't miss common things like, you know, diabetes, for instance, or anemia, those sorts of things. I guess from a psychiatric diagnosis point of view, it's also very helpful to look at the categorical diagnoses that occur in psychiatry. So if a patient has depression, then that gives you a clue of what you might want to do, what psychotherapies you might want to try, what medications you might want to try. And it's very important that you actually know that a patient is or isn't depressed, for instance, or isn't psychotic. But I guess the thing that we GPs do all the time is more to describe what we think is going on with the patient and why this patient is unwell at this time. And when we talk to each other, we often describe that in a very story-like way, like a narrative way, and we'll say things like, well, this is an elderly man who's caring for his wife, and as she's got more frail, he's started to struggle and now he's become quite depressed. And by using that story, we communicate a lot more than just the category. And I find I actually even now put those things in the notes in very definite order so that I don't find my head getting a little bit scrambled.
Yes, yes. And those things are so important, and they can be left out if we don't elaborate on that story, and it makes such a difference to the person sitting in front of you, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. And I mean, one of the things that I find tricky is that there's a lot of writers saying that, you don't have a psychiatric diagnosis the same way you have something like a broken leg, because a psychiatric diagnosis affects who you are as a person. So if you take just the categorical diagnosis, if you think about a patient who has that very physical depression and just can't get out of bed in the morning and it looks dead behind the eyes and those sorts of things. They're quite different than, say, the patient who's depressed because they've lost everything in a bushfire. And I think we know as GPs that that's sort of not the same thing, and we don't approach it in the same way, even though it has the same diagnosis. So I guess that formulation helps us to make sense of what's going on so that we can then work out how we're actually going to incorporate that in our treatment.
Yes, yes. And then obviously there are interactions between all these different aspects as well. And you particularly talk about trauma and the group of patients that have suffered some trauma. Do you want to talk a little bit more about that?
Yeah, there's a lot of thinking going on with childhood trauma at the moment, and when DSM-5 comes out next year, we're thinking that there'll probably be a category like complex post-traumatic stress disorder for people who've experienced trauma in childhood. I think one of the things we miss is that for patients who've experienced childhood trauma, we know that that affects their physiology. We know that they become more sensitive to the normal stresses that we cope with in life, as well as having this whole background of memories and so on that are quite distressing. So I think in terms of childhood trauma, we're beginning to realise that it can affect people's physical well-being and their emotional well-being, and also, I guess, change the way that they see the world and the way that they interact with people. So I think there's something about trauma that I think we're going to find is quite different. And my sense of people who've had significant, awful childhood trauma, they're often right in the middle of a Venn diagram. They've got medical stuff, they've got psychiatric stuff, they've got psychosocial stuff. They often experience poverty, and there's a whole lot of interactions in there that make things very difficult for us as GPs. And I think that's going to change. Our idea of trauma, I think, is going to change in the next few years.
Yes, and if we can find another way of thinking about these types of patients, because they're often sort of those patients that get labels such as, you know, the heart sink patient who, you know, we're just so overwhelmed and don't know what to do with them. So if we can try and think of other ways to approach it, it will be helpful for us too in dealing with these patients and hopefully improve outcomes for them as well.
Absolutely, and with registrars particularly, I know it's always a relief when I say to them, you know, this is a chronic illness that patients have and they've got chronic trauma, and that means that there's consequences and it's not fixable, and you just have to be with patients as they get better or somewhat better, but it doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to be able to cure the situation. And I think it's very important to acknowledge that these patients are that way. And I agree with you in terms of diagnosis. One of the things I found in my study was GPs talked about the layer of dismissal that goes on patients when you give them a diagnosis like borderline personality disorder or hyperchondriasis, and there's something about those terms that belittle or demean the patient and make, you know, they have that layer that when they go into casualty, it's the eye rolling of the staff and that sort of thing. So GPs are quite protective of using those labels because they don't help. So I think thinking of childhood trauma or post-traumatic stress disorder is a lot more helpful than choosing a term like borderline personality disorder, which is quite dismissive.
Yes, yes. And further to that, you sort of expand on the diagnosis from different perspectives and what it means to different people. So the doctor versus the patient, etc. Do you want to talk a bit more about that?
Absolutely. One of the things I've noticed in my study is that the thing we write in the notes is often very different than the thing we think in our heads and the thing we tell other people. So we might be thinking in terms of borderline personality disorder because that helps us understand, but we might not be sharing that with the patient because either we're not sure that that's correct or because we know that it's going to have this layer of dismissal thing and it's not going to be helpful. The funny thing is with all my participants that I interviewed, one of the things that they did was when I asked them how they'd hand a patient over, they all started with a phrase like, he's a very nice person, or she's a woman who struggles a lot and has a lot to cope with. So everyone sort of had this nice phrase at the beginning to say, look, this isn't a heart sink patient and I actually care about her and I want you to care about her too, even though there was then, you know, a litany of issues that this patient had to cope with in life and that probably we were going to be dealing with this chronically for a very long time. So I think we're very careful in our handover.
Yes, yes. And then there's also the concept of third parties and you know, the way that things are perceived from that perspective.
Yeah, absolutely. We've talked a little bit about what happens in accident and emergency or in acute mental health settings in terms of things like personality disorders, which could be quite dismissive. But the other thing we all worry about, of course, is how that's going to be perceived by third parties like insurance companies, for instance. And it's very tricky to try and think of a categorical diagnosis when you've got a patient who's just had a litany of trauma, because it's not really depression. And, you know, we know that if we put depression in the notes, that then implies a whole lot of things for third parties, and we don't know how that's going to be perceived. So, you know, if a patient has depression, fair enough, we diagnose depression and that's the way it is. But some of these patients with medically unexplained symptoms, you do think about how you're going to represent them, I guess, because of the consequences to them with third parties.
Yes. And what about for the patient themselves? How important is, you know, a diagnosis or their diagnosis for the patient, even in terms of, you know, an ability to become more well?
Yeah, well, it's interesting. There's a guy called Broyard who said that no one wants an anonymous illness. And I think I think that's right. Patients have to have a story. They have to explain to people why it is that they're ill, why they're not functioning. And they have to have a story that gives them some sort of positive control or something that they can do, some story that they can work with, for instance. So with patients like this, I think it's very common for us to use stories that we pick up in narratives. So we might say things like, well, you've had a lot to cope with and it's temporarily overwhelmed you and we're going to work with that for a while, and over time I'm expecting you to get back on your feet. But I still use stories like nervous breakdown, for instance, because it makes sense to patients that that's what's happening when they're flooded with trauma. Or you might use another story like just coping, like you've overwhelmed your coping capacity and it's just not working at the moment, and so we're going to have to work on that to build it up again. So I guess we use various stories. And for those of us who've done some psychological training, sometimes the theories give us a bit of a story. So CBT, for instance, gives you the story that, yes, you're having difficulty with certain situations, but maybe if we can change the way that you think about these situations, it will help you manage them more effectively. So sometimes using those psychological theories will give you stories that are actually quite effective.
Yes. That's certainly something that we all encounter multiple times in our practice, and I know I often wish I had more skills in the area, so it's certainly something to consider. So I guess in summary, Louise, what sort of things would you suggest that GPs think about when they come across these types of patients? Just, I guess, some key points in an approach that we could work on.
Well, the first thing is that GPs do a very good job. And maybe that's because I'm a GP, but we all hear the story that we miss depression and we miss chronic disease and all sorts of things we don't do. The evidence is that the therapeutic relationship's really, really important. So even if what you think you're doing is sitting there listening to somebody who's got chronic trauma and doesn't seem to be getting any better, the evidence is that's the best thing that you can do in terms of their function. So I think that's a really important point. And the second thing, I think, is to actively think in those three frames and to stand back and every now and then just do a bit of, you know, scanning for disease or disease surveillance and make sure that you haven't missed something physical. But don't feel you have to do that all the time. So step into that phase, do your blood tests, examine your patient, and then step back into coping. I think that's better than constantly being on the edge of your own anxiety, thinking, but what if I'm missing something? But what if this is hyperparathyroidism? Or what if there's some awful sort of rheumatoid thing I'm not recognising? So I think that's helpful. And I think Murtaugh's model of, you know, serious disorders not to be missed and common masquerades is a good one to put in the front of your brain and actually name what you're worried about. You know, this patient's got cough. Okay, well, these are the things it could be. It's not that, it's not that, it's not that. Oh, okay. Then I can leave it for now and it's nothing serious and we can move on. So I think just having that capacity to move around those frames is very helpful, and sometimes picking up some psychological ideas so that you've got some more stories, and listening to other GPs' stories, the way they explain things to patients, is very helpful.
Yes, wonderful. Well, thank you very much for your time, Louise. It's a fascinating
area. You're welcome.
We'll all endeavour to learn a bit more.
Thanks very much, Sarah. That's fine.
Bye.